here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
It's the Crossover Sports Illustrated's NBA show. Breaking down the latest news, rumors, and everything in between. Here's your host, Chris Mannix, Rohan Adkady, and Chris Herring.
Well, the long national nightmare is officially over. James Harden is headed to the Los Angeles Clippers. I'm Chris Mannix, joined by my Sports Illustrated colleagues, Chris Herring and Rohan Nadkarni. And fellas, we have some resolution here. This is the last time we are going to be talking about a James Harden trade. The sum and substance of this deal, to put it out there. James Harden and PJ Tucker are headed from Philadelphia to Los Angeles. A package headlined by Marcus Morris, Robert Covington, Nick Batum, and two first-round picks. A 2026 first-round pick and a 2028 first-round pick are headed to Philadelphia. Now, when I read about this deal on Tuesday morning, a boxing reference came to mind, as it often does. We are now just past the 49th anniversary of The Rumble in the Jungle. Ali is one of my favorite movies, and in my head, I'm thinking about John Voight and his character, him playing Howard Cosell. When Ali knocks George Foreman down, you hear John Voight go, "It is over! It is over! It is over!" That is exactly how I felt when this deal ultimately went down, because now we can all move on. We can no longer have to talk about James Harden wanting out of Philadelphia. So, there's a lot to get into here, but Herring, we'll start with you on this. Who won this trade?
I mean, I think it has to be, from this standpoint, just the Sixers, really, because in this case, they get to move on from Harden. You weren't going to get, it seemed like, not production out of the guy, or if you were, would he be on the same page? And my biggest question about this for a while now has been, how much does this gum up the progress of Tyrese Maxey? And I think that's got to be him and Joel Embiid have to be your biggest focal points here, even more so, I think, than exactly what you get back for Harden. Even if it was a little bit less than what you wanted, you can't run the risk of running your MVP out of town. You can't run the risk of having an unhappy Tyrese Maxey on the cusp of trying to sign him to a big deal. So I think the Sixers moving on, getting some rotational pieces, which, are they great? Maybe not. You don't have a top-flight guy. I don't think you were ever going to get a top-flight guy back for him, but you have some picks, you've got some rotation guys. Be happy with that and just try to win with that. And the Clippers, hooray, you got him. You didn't have to give up Terrence Mann to do it. He's a player that can absolutely help you. I don't know what it exactly does for their team. I think it's too early to tell. It's going to be a lot of ISO for that team, which it has been a lot anyway, but they have a legitimate point guard along with the fact that they have Russell Westbrook. So we'll see what happens with that. But it didn't really feel like anybody shifted wholeheartedly here. More so, it was just kind of getting clarity for both teams. And like you said, it's over. And it's like, I'm the winner because I don't have to write about this anymore. Neither do you, neither does Rohan. That's the way it truly feels. But I don't know that any team, feels like this ups their odds of winning a title significantly. Maybe it does, but I don't see that right now.
So, Rohan, I think the Sixers are big winners in all this. They, excise James Harden from their roster, which, takes away what was bound to be a distraction for as long as he was on it. And I think there's value in that. They also get two first-round picks back. And people could sneeze at that, but two first-round picks for an expiring contract and a player that didn't want to be there is real value back in return. In addition, these are two appealing first-round picks. The 2026 Clippers pick is an appealing one. The 2028 Clippers pick may be an even more appealing one. Nobody really knows what the Clippers are going to look like a year. I mean, they've got a whole bunch of guys. Like, their whole starting lineup, minus, Zubac, is a free agent next summer. Can be a free agent next summer. So those two first-round picks are going to be incredibly valuable as Philadelphia goes shopping. And that's exactly what they're going to do right now, is go shopping with those two picks. Now, I don't think it's a situation where, you know, like a third team gets looped in over the next couple of hours. I think there's going to be a time period where this is the Sixers roster, where they'll play Marcus Morris, where they'll play Robert Covington. But over the next couple of weeks and months, as the season plays out, they're going to get aggressive after some stars. And I think they're going to have the ammunition to go out there and to get them. I mean, you know, two names that I've been writing about a little bit over the last few hours, Zach LaVine in Chicago and OG Anunoby in Toronto. Now, the Bulls, they're just going nowhere. The Bulls have been in quicksand for a couple of years now. LaVine's got 3 years left on his contract. I'm sure the Bulls, I'm not sure of anything actually with the Bulls, but you know, it would make sense for the Bulls to be interested in draft capital in exchange for Zach LaVine. And Toronto, look, they've been willing to deal Anunoby for some time. You just had to give them real assets back in return. And, you know, two Clippers picks plus whatever expiring deals the Sixers have on their roster, it's pretty damn good. It's a pretty decent return, I think, for a player that's now on an expiring deal in Anunoby and can walk at the end of the year. So to me, this was a really good day for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah. First of all, Mannix, I just want to commend your really dramatic intro there. Just really good stuff from you all around. I think this is a win for both teams, to be honest. And we can touch on the Clippers in a second. Ultimately, they got their guy. And I do think there's some interesting stuff for the Clippers in this deal. As far as Philly goes, I'm on the same page as you guys. I think Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, Zach LaVine, Karl Towns. I think there are a lot of names that could be in play for the Sixers. They have the expiring deals, whether it's Tobias Harris.
You had me till Karl Towns. Like,
I'm just saying.
After watching Karl Towns and Rudy Gobert, their defensive rating is terrible. It's not. It's just,
Point being, there are going to be names, there are going to be stars, there are going to be that third kind of scorer. I think those kinds of players will be available for the Sixers, and they have their own first-round pick. One important bit of housekeeping, that 2026 pick, I believe, is the least favorable of a Thunder, Rockets, and Clippers pick coming out that year, but it's still a first-round pick. It's a real first-round pick. It's not protected. It will be in the first round. You know, a pick's a pick when it comes to these trades. So they have the assets to go make that move. And beyond that, I kind of like this team as presently constructed. I think Batum is an upgrade over PJ Tucker in the sense that he's a pretty good defender in his own right, but he's also a more willing shooter. He has a little bit of creativity off the bounce. Robert Covington's best years of his career came playing against off of Joel Embiid in Philadelphia. I think Marcus Morris, he's been out of the rotation for quite a while now, dating back into the last season, but you get a chance to revive him, you know, in backup lineups. He can shoot as much as he wants. So considering Harden, kind of like back in the Ben Simmons trade when that happened, considering he wasn't even in the rotation, the Sixers are waking up today with at least two guys who can help the team immediately and possibly a third. Kenyon Martin Jr. also has had some nice moments for the Rockets last year and is an intriguing prospect. So I think the Sixers definitely made out well, and if I'm them, I'm using the three picks that I have now and those 2 seconds, and I'm throwing them for Siakam, I'm throwing them for Anunoby, and then I think you're looking at a really legit contender. But you look at how they played so far this season. I thought Embiid had a weird first half against Milwaukee, but ever since then, he's been fantastic. They were hanging with the Bucks. That was a one-point game. They could have beaten Milwaukee. We haven't seen him against Boston yet, but they have now, I think, more capable wings to throw at Boston to make that matchup more interesting than it was before the start of the season. So I think Philadelphia's positioned really well, but I don't want to sleep on what the Clippers have done here. I'm not a fan of James Harden. At the same time, their stars were clearly really pushing for this. If you just think back to last year's playoffs, obviously Kawhi ended up getting hurt, but Kawhi was giving the Suns all they could handle in that first round, even without Paul George. You had a guy like James Harden into that mix. I think gives them insurance, even if one of their stars is hurt for the first round of the playoffs, the first two rounds of the playoffs, etc. They're going to need all those guys healthy to win the finals. But I tweeted this. There's a hilarious amount of qualifiers here. Health, buy-in, fit, etc. But on paper, I think this team's deeper than the Suns, rather, and you could argue their top end talent is just as good. So it's not as sexy of a take, but I really love it for both sides.
You know, it is a bummer for Philadelphia to have to give up P.J. Tucker in this deal, because P.J. Tucker in recent years has been a very good Giannis defender, very good, you know, he can take on a three or a four and defend that player at a decent level. And, you know, Tobias Harris, as I told you guys, is playing well. Contract year Tobias Harris, that is a thing. Contract year players are a thing. He's not the same type of defense player. So they've got some work to do to, you know, Marcus Morris, I watched him play in the playoffs a lot in Boston. And I think Marcus Morris is probably among the happiest this deal got done. I mean, I wrote this a couple of weeks ago. Like, you know, one of the reasons the Clippers, you know, leaked out that they were moving on for now from James Harden is that the guys in their locker room can count to $35.6 million. Like, they know that to acquire James Harden, a bunch of them had to go out. So, and Marcus Morris knew he was going to be first in line in all that. So, I think Marcus Morris is going to help. I think he's going to be an invigorated guy playing where he's from, right? I think he's from that general area. So, good for Marcus Morris to get a new opportunity down there. Herring, do you think Joel Embiid, you know, wakes up happy with all this? How do you think Joel Embiid is going to react in the days to come to, you know, this situation being resolved the way it is?
I mean, it's reinforcements, and I think Rohan brings up a really good point that these guys, there's reason to believe that these guys, whether through past experience, as you just mentioned, more motivation just to be out of a scenario. I mean, Morris literally posted on Instagram, like, it was time to get out of Hollywood or whatever he said.
Into the trenches, back into the trenches.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, for whatever, I think all these guys have different reasons. The fact that Batum is, you know, like Rohan said, a more willing shooter, better shooter than P.J. Tucker. I think there's something's lost here. Like you said, Tucker is a loss from the standpoint of his ability to defend in the post. You know, a little bit different. Batum can do that, but I think you would look forward more to someone like P.J. Tucker maybe doing that. There's some downsides to it, but I still think overall, if you're Embiid, especially after the Ben Simmons situation, I think you just want to have guys. You want to have guys that want to be there. You don't want to have the media asking you about this every day. Nick Nurse, I imagine, is also one of the happiest people about this too. having to throw in a guard that hasn't even really fundamentally learned the offense he wants to run, the wrinkles in the offense that he's installed. So I just think at a certain point, you just want to have your team. And it's preferable to do that now than it is to do it. It would have been preferable in the offseason, but it's preferable now as opposed to doing this in February at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I think for Embiid, I think he's probably, you know, happy that something got done. But I think his mindset's going to be what's next, because, you know, Joel Embiid has made it clear he wants to win a championship. And this trade doesn't really push the Sixers closer to winning a championship. It's the next deal, whatever they do, that will push the Sixers a little bit closer. And I think Philadelphia does need to be careful with what they do this season. Part of what they got back from the Clippers was a whole bunch of expiring contracts. They're going to have anywhere from $50 to $65 million in cap flexibility this summer. They can go out and get a max level guy, just sign that player outright. So, you know, before they give up their draft assets for a player, they've got to think long and hard about whether they could get that player in the offseason. I'm talking about someone like Anunoby. Klay Thompson is someone that popped to mind as well. Klay Thompson, you know, I don't know how it's going to work out with Golden State. And, you know, I instinctively think that it's going to eventually work out that he stays there. But the Sixers are in a position to make Klay Thompson a monster offer next offseason. Is there a player on the market that would fit better than Klay Thompson? A natural shooter, you know, still decent defender with championship experience like that? That makes a lot of sense in Philadelphia. So I think the Sixers have to just be careful and be really deliberate with what they do with their next move. But Rohan, let's talk about the Clippers then, the Clippers side of all this. You know, on paper, they can make an argument that they have the best starting lineup in the NBA. On paper, you know, you've got all NBA talent in Harden, in Kawhi, and in Paul George. I think Zubac is a perfectly fine, you know, middle of the pack, maybe even close to the top 10 center in the NBA. Great rebounder for sure, who can rim protect a little bit. I mean, Terrence Mann, whenever he gets healthy, presumably will be out in the court. Russell Westbrook. The Russell Westbrook part interests me. Like, we already did this in Houston with Russell Westbrook and James Harden. It didn't work. Now, they didn't have Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, and some of the others in Houston. It was really just the Russ and James show, but it didn't really work with them paired up together with the Rockets. Where do you slot the Clippers now in kind of that Western Conference hierarchy?
I mean, I think right now Denver's in its own tier in the West. I think they've kind of shown early season they've separated themselves. No one has an answer for Jokic. I kind of have the Clippers right there in that next tier, though, whether it's with the Suns. I think you could make an argument for the Lakers being in there, that they've had an iffy start. I mean, the Lakers haven't looked great. The Warriors are looking better, and I think they're in that tier, but they're obviously still an older team with a little bit less star power. They still have to figure out what the starting lineup is going to be. I'm with you. Russ has bought in. I thought he was fantastic for them in the playoffs last year. He's been really good so far to start this year. I have to imagine he was consulted to a degree before they made a move like this. But just think of their...
You think I mean, Russ is on a minimum contract, basically.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a star player in contract anymore, but I think, again, I think Kawhi and PG wanted him there, and I think you could probably say the same for Harden. They made it work. There's two things. One, you look at the Clippers' top eight. It's Westbrook, Kawhi, PG, Harden, Zubac. Then you have Norm Powell, Terrence Mann, and PJ Tucker. That is a fantastic, playoff-tested, playoff-proven top eight. PJ Tucker is the last guy I remember having any measure of success guarding Jokic. If you remember that Sixers-Nuggets matchup, they put Tucker on Jokic, let Embiid roam. I'm very interested to see the Clippers try that similar strategy at some point this year, but I think that's maybe one of the best playoff top eights that we have in the league. I think other teams may have a better top six, top five, but they're not quite that deep. And I'll say this about Harden. I'm not going to sit here and make a defense for James Harden. I'm someone who's as pro player as they come. I think what he's done the last couple of years, the last few exits, is just absurd. I don't like it. I'm not a fan of it. The last time we saw him in a somewhat similar situation in Brooklyn, when he wanted to play with those two stars, there was talk of him winning an MVP that same year. We thought he was in a fat suit in Houston because of how good he was that first year in Brooklyn. He was a willing third option, a willing facilitator, played without the ball, distributed. Those are the kinds of things he's going to be asked to do with the Clippers. And I think he played that role really well in Brooklyn. And of course, people would say, listen, that ended up in a disaster. The factors that it required for the Brooklyn situation to end up in a disaster, we'll look back on one day and say this had to be scripted between KD's toe on the line and a once in a millennium pandemic. I mean, the factors that it took for the Brooklyn thing to blow up are kind of so fantastical that it's hard to imagine them happening again, knock on wood. So I do think that we have proof that Harden, when he's in the right situation, when he's motivated, is kind of willing to be a third option. On some nights, he's going to be the fourth option on the team if Russ has it going. So I think in terms of basketball fit, if you're telling me where do I want James Harden at this point in his career, if he's your third or fourth option, I think that's pretty good. But again, it just comes down to, are these guys going to buy in and are they going to be healthy? And we just have no way of knowing that.
Herring, I think if you're looking for reasons to be optimistic about why Harden will work in Los Angeles, it's that on the top of his wish list is a new contract. And he's not going to get a new contract unless he buys in and is the kind of player the Clippers want to reward with one. Now, there's a reason he wanted to trade to Los Angeles. And it's not because he's from there. It's because by getting a trade to Los Angeles, the Clippers now have the right to resign him in the same way that that Philadelphia had the right to resign him at whatever number they want to do at, you know, next year. The Clippers have the deepest pockets in the NBA. Steve Ballmer's worth like $80 billion. They're going to open a new arena, you know, next fall. There's going to be a motivation to have a lot of star power in that building. So if you're James Harden, you are never going to be more motivated than you are right now. Not only do you have a chance to win, which should be the number one priority, but if you win, you produce. Steve Ballmer's going to open the checkbook, and Steve Ballmer's going to pay you to stay there. So if you're looking for reasons to be optimistic that the Harden trade is going to work out well for the Clippers, I think that is the biggest reason why.
I mean, it's hard to disagree with that. I mean, I would counter with the fact that he theoretically could have done that with Philly as well and not caused an issue in Philly. Now, granted, he was upset with Daryl Morey, We can speculate as to why. I think we can read between the lines of what could have happened there and what very, I think a lot of people would say is likely to have happened, that there was some sort of agreement or some sort of understanding that he had there that wasn't followed through on. Okay, once that happened, how do you react? And, you know, we all thought he has to be on his best behavior now because he's playing for a contract. And then and then takes off, you know, after showing up, what, a day late after media day or for day one or day two of training camp, and then doesn't show up, then shows up, you know, a couple days before the season starts. So we all were of that thought process anyway, and then he kind of blew that to shreds. Now he gets another opportunity. He has a new start here, a fresh start here. My question in all of it is, if Rohan's point is that, you know, it took crazy circumstances for the situation in Brooklyn not to work, which I agree with, it's not that crazy to think about how this could fall apart really quickly. If one of or both of the two main stars that he's playing with in LA aren't there, it very quickly turns into what it was in Brooklyn, except James Harden is older now, where he just doesn't have stars to play with, which is why, from where I sit, the Philly situation is so wild, because it's like you had Embiid has become a healthy player in this league. It's sort of the way that we think about Curry now, where we don't think about his health a lot of the time after that was all we thought about early on in his career. Embiid's been healthy. He's won an MVP. And Maxey has been healthy throughout his career. So it's a little wild to see him walk away from that voluntarily, even with the stuff that was, you know, rumored or maybe did happen in Philly. All it would take here is Paul George or Kawhi Leonard or both to not be healthy, and all of a sudden he's got a bigger role than maybe what he thought he was getting, and he's older. And, you know, it's a team that at its best, I think part of the reason they're so good is because they have so much defense and so much versatility, so much depth, some of which you just traded away and some of which is not healthy a lot of the time. So it could work. It could give them another playmaker, a guy that led the league in assists, you know, and has done that over the course of his career, can be a distributor, can knock down shots if he's open, can create for himself, can get to the line. I don't think it's going to work. I just kind of feel like it's a confluence of too many strange things. He's not my favorite at this moment for all the reasons that Rohan stated, and just I don't know how anybody can look at him and say he's dependable. I don't think anyone can. It could work. But I also think the Clippers, like, even without him, could have worked. I just think that those factors have more to do with their top two players than they do with James Harden. I don't know that throwing him into situations makes them more likely to do anything. I just think that it kind of leaves them where they were. It rearranges the chairs a little bit. It gives him a better opportunity to get paid. I do agree with you from that standpoint.
I just want to – I'll push back on that slightly. I'll say this. If Kawhi and PG get hurt, with or without James Harden, their chances aren't good. But if they stay healthy, and I think the Clippers have to operate from a position of these guys are going to be healthy in the playoffs. I don't think you can really operate from a position. Exactly. And I think if you're operating from that premise, I think this does bring them closer to a championship at the end of the day. And it gives them some regular season insurance, too, when they want to rest Kawhi, when they want to rest PG, to stay afloat, stay near the top of the conference. So you know, with the second apron next year, they're going to be restricted in the kind of trades they do. All those expirings are not necessarily guys you want to re-sign. It's a long-term deal. So I think there are a lot of reasons at the end of the day for the Clippers to make this move. Even if it brings you incrementally closer to a championship, I think that's why you do it. It also just dawned on me that we could get a second round of the Western Conference playoffs with Steph, Klay, Draymond, LeBron, AD, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, Kawhi, PG, Harden, Westbrook. For the love of God, we need that to happen.
There's a lot of variations of the Western Conference playoffs that would be interesting. Like,
yeah. And that doesn't include the Nuggets. That doesn't include the Nuggets. So
that conference is as advertised, that's for sure. One last thing about the Sixers deal. Look, I've butted heads with Daryl Morey in the past. He's lumped me into the Boston media mafia. You know,
shout out to Daryl, truth teller.
Okay. Inaccurate, which he and I discussed over the phone that time. I give him credit for this because he didn't give James Harden a long-term deal when that probably would have been the path of least resistance. He didn't just offload James Harden when James Harden went to China and called him a liar. he didn't just dump James Harden when James Harden, not once, but twice, you know, no-showed the 76ers during training camp. He waited it out. He waited for what he wanted. He got what he wanted. And then he did a pretty good deal, a deal that, you know, with any luck, is going to net the Sixers another, you know, B to B plus level player to play alongside Embiid and Maxey.
Just a quick counterpoint to the Daryl Morey is a winner theory is that James Harden got to play where he wanted ultimately, which is the Clippers, didn't have to go to training camp really, and got to go clubbing with a bunch of people holding up a sign that said Daryl Morey is a liar.
Yeah,
James
Harden also made some moves out of that. Who comes out of that looking worse? Like, James Harden is as toxic as it comes right now. I mean, I'm with Harry. Like,
sure.
How do you rely on this guy to to give you anything? Like, when the going gets tough, he literally gets going, as he had in the last 3 years. So it's impossible to count on him to do anything. I just think Daryl stuck by his guns and got a deal done. And now he's moved a little bit closer to making Joel Embiid happy enough to stay there long term. And that's the ball game. Like, you've got to keep Embiid around and Embiid happy for this to be any kind of functional franchise. Now with Embiid and Tyrese Maxey, you know, they've got a foundation there. It's the one more piece, and I think they can compete with Boston, Milwaukee in the Eastern Conference. All right, let's talk about Chris Paul. I was on FanDuel this morning, and I was scrolling through the odds for Sixth Man of the Year, just out of curiosity. And I saw that Chris Paul was listed at plus 1,300 to win Sixth Man of the Year. Now, I'm not a huge gambler, aside for some boxing bets, but I would, if I'm people out there listening, get over to SI Sportsbook for one. If I'm gambling, that might be something I'd put a little bit of money on, because for the last two games, Chris Paul has looked incredibly comfortable as a sixth man and incredibly efficient as a sixth man. I watched that Pelicans Warriors game last night, which I thought was going to be like the marquee game. The Pelicans were coming in hot.
I did.
Zion
too.
Was healthy.
We all had it on. Yeah, we were excited.
You know, Brandon Ingram. You know, you just got all these, you know, all these variables in play. I thought that was going to be a really good game, and the Warriors went out and just curb stomped the Pelicans. I do think, you know, obviously Steph Curry gets a lot of the credit for that, and deservedly so. He was a monster shooting the basketball in that game. But what has the problem been with the Warriors in recent years? It's been the non-Steph Curry minutes. Chris Paul has single-handedly changed that. Chris Paul, I know it's a small sample size, but Chris Paul statistically has made this team a better team with Steph Curry off the floor than he is on. And look, that's not going to keep up, obviously, but when I'm watching Chris Paul with that second unit, a bunch of guys that nobody would recognize if they saw them on the street, like, they're getting wide open looks. They're getting open dunks going down the lane. Chris Paul is orchestrating the offense magnificently. You know, this is a guy, Rohan, that he is, I think, already a strong candidate for sixth man. And if he stays in that role, he's not only going to be effective for the Warriors, he's going to be a presence at that position for years to come.
Yeah, I thought this was an inevitable outcome, and it's playing out exactly like how I thought it would. I mean, remember in the summer when people were like, the Warriors need to add size, they don't have a center? All of a sudden, Trayce Jackson-Davis is looking like the best backup big in the league. Why? Because he's running pick and rolls with Chris Paul. I think at this point, any one of us could just set screens for Chris Paul and kind of get assisted our way into 6 points a night. That's how good he is as a point guard. I think he's been fantastic. Their bench, Moses Moody's been really playing really well. Gary Payton II looks healthy. I mean, they have a legitimate bench group. And what I love about having Chris Paul with that backup unit, yes, I think one day eventually they're going to need to figure out who their closing five is in the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. They can figure that out. But it significantly reduces Steph Curry's regular season workload. I know Herring's mentioned we don't worry about the ankles anymore, but Steph's, you know, gotten battered a little bit the last few years with injuries, trying to carry this team over and over again. The amount of stressful minutes that Steph Curry has to play now during the regular season is a lot fewer. And the same can be said for Chris Paul. We saw his body break down the last few years in Phoenix every time they tried to make a deep playoff run. His minutes will go down. But he still gets to run the show in these backup minutes. I think it's perfect for everyone. Again, I'm interested to see when it's a high-stakes game who they have to close with. But as Chris mentioned, the fact that they are increasing their lead with Curry on the bench is such a gigantic development. It makes them nearly impossible to beat, because we, over the last however many years now, we have not seen teams able to consistently beat the Warriors with Steph on the floor. And if you're backups, I mean, Chris Paul is overqualified to be going up against backups in these lineups. That's what makes him so effective. I think it's a home run. Again, it's early. Mannix is right. It's very early. But for me, it's working out exactly like I thought it would. And I think it's going to pay huge dividends for everyone involved.
Herring, he's like a plus 39 in the two games he came off the bench. It's ridiculous. I mean, how sustainable do you think that is?
I don't think it's going to stay there, but I also don't think it needs to. I mean, let's keep in mind a couple things. One, the Warriors were awful last year on the road, and they played against one of the teams that to me had looked the best. Part of the reason I think we were all three of us were excited to watch that game last night is that the Pelicans have been one of the teams that's looked best so far this season. And, you know, they were playing last night without Ingram, sure, but that was a pretty good game through one half. It was, I think, like 59 to 56 at half. And the truth is they just kind of blew the doors off New Orleans with New Orleans at home yesterday in the second half.
And by the way, Herring, no Ingram for the Pelicans, no Klay Thompson for the Warriors in that game.
So good point. Very good point. So from that standpoint, I think the reason that I always kind of liked this, and I think most of us have all kind of known that the Warriors at some point were going to want to at least try to see what they look like with Chris Paul coming off the bench. They had a one-game reprieve where they didn't have to make Chris Paul feel that way because Draymond Green was out. But, you know, game two of the season, you know, for the first time in Chris Paul's career, comes off the bench. And the reason that I always thought that this had potential for them, their biggest problem, aside from like inconsistency and stuff like that, they had a lot of young guys with that bench unit, and they turned the ball over like crazy. And so I have to say it. You know, I feel like the memes are going to do it for us if we don't say it out loud. Jordan Poole has looked nuts, like in these games where he's doing this Golden State sort of thing. He's turning around and twirling around while a shot is in the air to kind of showboat. Just, you know, dribbling behind his back and taking like kind of like almost a no look three pointer, and he's getting blocked by Porzingis and then, you know, finished on the other end by Porzingis. It's just it stands out more with a bad team, but it in a lot of ways it stood out a lot with a really good team in Golden State too, because the team just makes too many mistakes for what you think of as a championship contender. And so you swap him out, you bring in Chris Paul, who historically has had one of the best assist to turnover ratios in NBA history. Like, no, the guy's not blowing past people anymore, and he's not a great, great, dominant three-point shooter. But one, neither is Jordan Poole, and two, he's not turning the ball over the way Jordan Poole was. And even at his age, he's still a better defender than Jordan Poole. So, I mean, just from that standpoint, there were so many people of like, why would you want Chris Paul there? Rivalry, the aging factor, the health question. Well, guess what? He gets to play less minutes on this team. He's not going to turn the ball over, and he can defend within a scheme. And those are three things that you couldn't really bank on with Jordan Poole. Two of them, I feel like you weren't going to bank on at all. You just know that they're not going to happen. And so from that standpoint, it always had the potential to be useful. The pick and roll play changes up what they do when it's, you know, when it's Steph Curry out there by himself, when they have a completely different scheme. I think it's healthy to have a different look, and particularly with one that, even if it's an aging Hall of Fame point guard, comes with the Hall of Fame point guard. So it's not surprising to me. I didn't think it would be this successful, but we'll see whether it pans out that way all year, and whether Chris Paul, he may not put up massive numbers, but he might not have to, because narrative-wise, you know, if this puts them in a top 2-3 seed after what we saw last year, I think you could argue that he'd be deserving of it, even if the numbers aren't there necessarily.
I think the numbers are going to be really good. Like, you know, what did he put up? His numbers last night against the Pelicans were, where am I seeing it here? Right, 13
I got him
points.
For you.
I got him. 13 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. That feels sustainable to me against one turnover too, which is fantastic. I think he can do that. And look, he's going up against like Kira Lewis, and you know he's going up against second unit guys, which are, you know, they're fine players, but they're you're not first unit guys. He's not having to go and, you know, D up CJ McCollum, for example, or somebody of that ilk. So I think he's going to be able to to do this pretty regularly. I was watching between that first and second quarter, like just seeing how calm Golden State was, not having to like rush back in like Steph Curry or rush back in Draymond Green or one of their starters. You can play Chris Paul and four reserves and do what they did. I think in that stretch, they were like plus six between the minute Steph Curry went out and the minute Steph Curry went back on the floor, came back on the floor. So Rowan, I just think this is, this has the potential to make, I didn't know if the Warriors were going to be better with Chris Paul, because Jordan Poole, you know, did have his moments and he's an improving scorer and all that stuff. But, you know, this version of Chris Paul, if the Warriors stay healthy with their starting lineup, it's a better fit than Jordan Poole is for, it's not just a moving one long-term contract for a shorter one. It's a better fit than Jordan Poole was.
I agree. And I just think it makes everyone's life easier, including Chris Paul. He's still averaging over 8 assists a game, which is kind of crazy.
It's incredible.
Right now, he's at around roughly 30 minutes a night, which would be a career low. And I'm willing to bet Perfect. That gets even lower. Yeah, it's just, it makes too much sense. Again, I'm interested to see if he's closing alongside Chris Paul in these closing lineups. I mean, it could be Moody. Moody's been fantastic.
Alongside Kuminga, Curry, I mean, yep.
Yes, just alongside Curry. Could be Moody, could be Kuminga. So it's still interesting to see who closes, because I don't think they're going to go the Draymond Looney look all the time. But it's a good problem for them to have right now, because the
and
team
And, by the way, I love that, you know, even with Clay out, Steve Kerr put Moody in the starting lineup. Like, you know, this is now Chris Paul's role. Like, you're not going to jerk him around in and out of the lineup. You know, maybe there's a long-term injury, you put him in, but just for short-term stuff, you're going to start somebody else and keep Chris Paul in that spot. I think it's only the more time he spends in that role, the more comfortable he's going to be, the better he's going to be. Plus 1,300, man. Plus 1,300. That's crazy. That's crazy. Who were the front runners for sixth man? Like Emmanuel Quickly?
The problem is it always goes to guys who score a lot, but it'll be incumbent on the voters to recognize.
I think Herring kind of touched on this. There'll be like a nostalgia vote for if they're like top three and Chris Paul's like up there giving you 13, seven and five.
I think the same way that it took a while for Cy Young winners, where you were getting guys that, was it Felix? Hernandez one year that had he went like 13-12 and won the Cy Young, and it was kind of threw everybody off that he did, or it didn't throw everybody off. There were a lot of the new wave kind of new age guys that, you know, baseball I've always thought was ahead of basketball as far as the way analytics are used. And I feel like we're just starting to see that turn with basketball, where guys that have an element of defense to their game, I don't know, it'll probably still take a while, but like the Lou Williams prototype may not win the award for the next 10 years the way it's been for the last 10 or 15, or like Jamal Crawford. And God bless him. Like, I think we all have been fans of him over the course of his career and stuff. But I think that it's starting to shift. And I think Brogdon and Quickly were kind of that ilk too, of like guys that play some defense. They put up numbers too. That's where I'm saying, and I think, quite frankly, Rohan pointed it out, if Chris Paul at times is not out there as part of their ending five, that's the sort of thing I see is potentially cutting into his argument of it's a team that is really loaded, also on the wing sometime, you know, just where if he's not part of that closing five, does that hurt his case? If he's hurt because he's Chris Paul and he's older and misses a couple weeks, does that hurt his case if someone like Quickly is playing 80 games and scoring more than him and plays really good defense? That's all I'm saying. It's not to say he won't be deserving. If he's in that conversation, he'll be there for a reason. But I do think this is a case where it was just such a big move and such an unusual role for Chris Paul, where it'll get talked about enough to where he's going to be in that conversation if he stays healthy and the Warriors are good.
Yeah. Just looking at the favorites for sixth man coming into the season, you had Emmanuel Quickly at the top, and that's understandable. But the Knicks, not off to a great start, having trouble offensively. Quickly's numbers shooting-wise have gone down, especially the three-point shot early in the season. Malcolm Brogdon, zero chance he's going to win. You're not going to give a guy on, you know, the 14th team in the Western Conference sixth man. Norman Powell, maybe. He's probably going to get more run now that that bench has been gutted a little bit. Malik Monk, maybe. Derek White's now a starter. Bobby Portis, maybe. Rui Hachimura, not from what we've seen so far. It's a wide open field, fellas. It's a wide open field right now.
It'll be interesting.
For sixth man. I thought it was going to be interesting. It is going to be interesting with Chris Paul in that mix. All right, last thing I want to get into. Flip back and forth from the Grizzlies-Mavericks game last night. And yeah, the Grizzlies have been decimated by injuries, but they were 0-3 going up against the Dallas team at home that did not have Kyrie Irving. So I thought that was the game Memphis was going to get. Like, they're going to get this game. They didn't. They wound up, I don't know what the final score was, but they were getting smoked for a little while. They rallied and wound up down, I think it was around 10 points. How much trouble, Rohan, are the Grizzlies in right now? Because they were missing five of their top eight rotation players. Several of those guys are not coming back. Steven Adams is not coming back. You can't count on Brandon Clark coming back. Like, that's too much to ask for a guy coming off an ACL injury to play meaningful minutes when he comes back in like March or April. And Ja Morant can't come back till mid-December at the earliest. I'm starting to get the feeling that Memphis, in an ultra-competitive conference, could wind up digging itself a hole it can't get out of, because they're having a nightmare of a time scoring in the half court. Their defense is not what it used to be. Some of those issues will get resolved when Morant comes back in mid-December, but I mean, they could be like a, I don't want to get too ahead of my skis here, but they could be like an 8-win team, you know, when Morant comes back in mid-December. How much trouble do you think the Grizzlies are in right now?
I'm getting nervous about the Grizzlies, and I tweeted last night, at what point do we panic about this team? And I had people hitting me up, you know, shout out to our guy, Lang Whitaker, who hit me up in the DMs. And I'm like, it's not that I think the Grizzlies are going to be a bad team when healthy, but it's like you said, how big of a hole are they going to dig by the time they get everyone back? Morant's out at least another 20 games. You mentioned Adams is done. I think Clark, I think it was an Achilles. I'd be shocked if he played this season. They were not projecting confidence about him playing this season. The West is really tough. You only have one team really in the West that you could say is tanking, and that's the Blazers. And they're not even like tanking in the way that they're going to be sitting guys. They just have a young team that's not really built to win now. You know, everyone else is competitive. Everyone else is trying to win. You know, Wemby is only going to get better. The Spurs are the other team you have an eye on. So I think they're absolutely in trouble here, and I don't know what they're going to do, because I think as much sense as Marcus Smart makes for them once Morant is healthy, as kind of a Dylan Brooks replacement, not having Tyus Jones is hurting this team a lot. Xavier Tillman, he gave them really good minutes in the playoffs when he was called upon. He's had a rough start to the season. They don't have a lot of front court depth behind him. I mean, it's a lot of David Roddy, Aldama. Again, these guys who had their moments last year but are being, I think, asked to do more than they can give right now. So I'm with you. I'm definitely worried about them. Now, I will say their upcoming schedule, they get Portland twice, Utah twice, and they get Miami at home. We were talking about how bad the Heat have looked before we started this podcast. Portland, again, we mentioned, that's a team that's gettable. Utah has not gotten off to the hot start that it got off to last year. So we could be looking a little silly here. I think it's legit possible the Grizzlies rip off five wins in a row considering their schedule. But if they don't take advantage of these five teams now, then it's like full on panic, sound the alarm. They got to do something here because it's not going to be that easy for the next couple months.
Herring, they're 15th in defensive efficiency right now. I think that can improve. They've got some good defenders on that team still. Jaren Jackson and Marcus Smart are two recent defensive players of the year. But the offensive rating is 26th, and I just don't know how much better that's going to get. They don't have a lot of half-court options, guys you can give the ball to and ask them to go make plays. Desmond Bane is a lights-out shooter, but you know he's not the guy you tell to go isolate. You know, Marcus Smart sometimes thinks he is. But there's not those guys there right now. So until Morant gets back, I don't see that improving all that much.
You know, I feel two ways about this. I didn't worry about them much at all until like a week and a half ago. And it was the Steven Adams injury that did it for me, because I think to me, yeah, there was this stuff going on with Ja Morant. And I think that in a lot of ways, you can say that derailed their season. But to me, it was when Adams and also Brandon Clark went down last year and weren't coming back. Specifically when we knew Steven Adams wasn't going to be able to make it back. I was like, oh, that's a problem. This is an offense that when Morant's not there, they rely, and even when he is there, they rely so much on Adams to get guys open with his screening. And not just that, but they've perennially been a really, really good offensive rebounding team. And without Adams there, Jaren Jackson Jr. is someone that, because of the way he plays and the way he can play, he plays along the perimeter a lot. And So in light of that, without Adams there, this is just a team that's not offensive rebounding well. Let's see, they're 28th in the league in terms of offensive rebound percentage right now. Whereas before this, certainly with Morant, and Adams there, Morant basically creates the most Kobe assists in the league, just the misses that he puts on the rim that someone's there to grab and put back right away. And so you, even with his misses, you get a lot of offense, certainly with Adams underneath there. And even before that, when they had Valanciunas, that was the case. So I just don't, I don't really like the way this team looks without Adams. There's some defensive stuff that I really don't love about it. And, you know, last night was a good example where Marcus Smart had a really great statistical game, a bigger game than what you're used to seeing out of him because of who he was playing with, you know, for years in Boston. He has more opportunity. He can make use of that at times, and he's going to put up big numbers sometimes. But is that really like a method to winning? Is that really something that you can rely on? Is it even something you want to rely on when you think about the fact that he's playing point guard for you and he's also trying to defend it sometimes, you know, in a lot of cases, your best, the other team's best wing player? It just doesn't really seem to compute. I think what was said about at one point about the idea of them maybe losing 6, 7, 8 games, and specifically Desmond Bane had said it, of the idea that, like, we've done that before. I think it's just getting more attention because it's the start of the season. I think that's accurate. They did have stretches last year where they didn't look very good, but I think this is a little bit different just in light of who they're missing. And I think Rohan brought up the good point. If they can't win a couple of these ones coming up soon, it starts to get concerning, and it starts to look more like, do we want to even really go for this thing right here and right now? Obviously you're going to play Morant once he's back, but it could be a, I don't know, if it's a lost year, it might not be the worst thing to kind of call it that, early, if that's the case. I don't know. I think the Pelicans last year, didn't they lose 13 out of 14 at one point after they lost Zion, and they were still fighting for a play-in chance. So I think there'll be opportunities. I don't think that the teams at the bottom of the standings are going to be much of a concern this year, but still, this is a team that's been operating from the top of the standings in the West for the last couple of years.
I mean,
it's much different to play from behind.
I will say 2 years ago, we had the Pelicans lose however many they lost to start the year and then come back in and give the Suns a fight in the first round. So maybe
they were young, though. They were young.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I agree.
That,
it's,
and didn't they make the McCollum trade like midseason? There wasn't that part of it.
True.
That was
true.
Last year.
So yeah.
Is that last year?
Oh, yeah.
Blanking.
No, that was 2 years ago now. That was a couple years
Or was
ago.
It two? Gosh, I can't even remember anymore. All the stuff is blending together in my head. But yeah, it happens sometimes.
I'm not saying it's a good strategy for Memphis, but I think we're all on the same page here. This week is pivotal for them.
I think they've got to, if not them, somebody. Can somebody please get Robert Williams out of Portland?
Yes.
It's paining
yes.
me to see Robert Williams in Portland.
Yeah, that could be a good move for them.
Every time that, you know, Chauncey rolls Robert Williams and DeAndre Ayton out there together, it's like you put me in a time warp. Like, what is this? When you're playing two guys that can't shoot, along with Scoot Henderson, who currently can't shoot. Like, you're not going to be competitive with that type of lineup. Robert Williams is 26 years old. A couple of years ago, he was in the top five for Defensive Player of the Year. He's on a manageable contract, so you can trade for him. Like, whether it's
playoff
the Grizzlies...
Yeah.
The playoff tested, like, was a finals starting center. Whether it's the Grizzlies, the Suns, the Warriors even could use another big body. Brooklyn could use another big body. Somebody should go out there and get Robert Williams out of Portland. By the way, DeAndre Ayton, your boy Rohan. It's not he's rebounding the ball really well, but I just can't get over the fact that he's averaging like 8 shots per game. Like, this is a guy
it's
that thought
rough.
he was coming to Portland to like shoot 20 times, to like finally be the number one pick, finally be the guy that gets the touches. He's got less than 8 attempts per game. That's wild.
I mean, listen, I tried to caution you from riding the DeAndre Ayton hype train, and there's no shame in being a center that, you know, needs to be set up by your guards. It's just a little bit different when you're a former number one overall pick, and you're making $30 million a year, and you gave yourself the nickname Dominatin'. You can't have all those three and not create your own shot.
All right, well, we will be back next week, and hopefully we will not be leading that show with James Harden.
It is over. Muhammad Ali has done the impossible. His great game, the heavyweight crown that was taken unjustly from him in When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.